Let's head over to the Zoom line where we got Nick Vaccaro on the line with us. He's a journalist as well as, he's got a day job too. What is your day job, by the way, when you're not doing the pen to paper or click to the clack, if you will, on the keyboard?
Well, I worked for 12 years as an HSE consultant in oil and gas, and now I'm the HSE manager for an oil field services company based out of the New Orleans area.
Okay, great. Outstanding. New Orleans area. How about a boots on the ground update from New Orleans before we get into kind of some of your journalism and some of the stories that you've either written for the Oil Man or written for other publications?
Well, New Orleans currently is hot. It's not enjoyable, but if you're looking for good food, it's there.
How about in the energy activity? Is there any oil and gas activity going on down there? I know Lake Charles is a very big hotbed in some of those areas, but does the New Orleans area get much of that energy activity?
It's more on the service side. There's a good deal of service companies that handle the offshore work. You know, most of the companies, they manage their assets from the Houston area. But we, you know, they're still, you know, Chevron, their Gulf of Mexico business unit is still located on the north shore of Covington. It's a suburb called Covington where I actually live. They're still there. And of course, Shell has their training center in in Robert, Louisiana, which is not far from New Orleans. But New Orleans, for the most part, is just a hotbed of service activity to go offshore and some land work, but mostly offshore stuff.
Given your geography and your expertise, if you will, with your day job, what type of journalism do you do in reporting and writing and feature articles do you do for the industry primarily? Do you have an expertise or is it just kind of whatever the editor assigns?
It's really whatever the editor assigns. Every once in a while I'll go, I'll come up with a subject and they give me free rein to write on it. There's been a good deal of capturing automation and, the software focus of how that can enhance the industry. And everything I've been writing here lately seems to have the common theme of how do we turn greater profits in oil and gas? And it's not so much from drilling more or anything like that. It's more on how do we increase efficiency and reduce non-productive time and reduce costs to, reduce costs to levy greater profits. That seems to be the theme of everything I've been writing here lately for the most part.
You write primarily for the Oil Man magazine. What is the current article or, something available that people could go to Oil Man magazine to read up on?
Well, I just recently finished and recently published a feature on Mike Summers, the president of API. And that was really enjoyable. Mike is a really nice guy. You can tell that he is really dedicated to the industry. We had a great conversation and we had a good deal in common. We've both traversed some of the same areas and so forth. But that was the cover of the current Oil Man issue. I'm really proud of that. Every once in a while I get to write some covers, but also some stock stuff for the insides of the magazine.
Do you have a favorite? How many years have you been writing either for the industry or for the Oil Man magazine?
I've been writing really for both the same amount of time since 2020. I was a photojournalism major in college, and the dream was to always work for Field and Stream. And I guess I was supposed to take a right, and I made a left, and I never went that way, and found myself in construction and then into oil and gas. And when the pandemic hit, I was just kind of at a crossroads and I was looking to do something creative. I love oil and gas safety. It's very rewarding, but I had always wanted to get published in a magazine. So I wrote an article for Louisiana Sportsman. And then I said, well, I want to keep doing this. What do I know about? And it was oil and gas. So I you know, I just started calling around, and I developed a great relationship with Oil Man and some others. And so they really gave me my start. And it's just been, you know, it's been a wonderful experience since.
Down in Louisiana, a lot of petrochemicals, a lot of importing, exporting, a lot of refineries, a lot of foreign ownership in the last 10 years. Boy, you name it, man. You could throw a dart at an editorial calendar and hit a story. Are there any stories that you're looking at that you would like to explore? Because, you know, sometimes we find as journalists, you know, certain outlets, whether it be a magazine or a radio station or a television station, they have their own business plan. And sometimes it doesn't match what the journalist wants. Imagine that, huh? Are there any like stories out there that you really want to go tackle that either the resources aren't there or the time isn't there or just the timing is not quite there? Just kind of, you know, what have you kind of put together in your mind as a great story for the oil industry?
I think a major focus down here is just on the offshore side, trying to meet the needs of the customers offshore. With still, we have supply chain issues and we have manpower issues, and focusing on that, you know, it led me to think, well, you know, there's plants up and down Interstate 10 from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, and you know, they've got a big responsibility to the energy sector. And I was thinking about that, you know, how is the manpower issue affecting them? You know, it certainly, you can have short service employees, you can have newcomers, but, you know, that's to operate in within those refineries and those plants. I mean, that's specialized job positions. And I'm curious of how they handle the manpower shortage. I attended the Petrochemical and Refining Summit a couple of months ago. It was held at the Roosevelt Hotel in New Orleans, and it was a great summit. And you know, they brought in speakers from different chemical plants from Louisiana to Texas, and they started discussing the manpower issue because some people haven't come back to work since COVID, since the pandemic, and then others just went ahead and retired, and they weren't prepared to backfill those roles as the seasoned professionals left. The you know, the people behind them ready to move up, they weren't ready. So I think that's a really interesting focus. And with all of the plants, like I said, up and down Interstate 10, I think the sources are just endless, and how that affects the everyday. So that's something that I would like to focus on.
Were you able to touch that or brief that at all with Mike Summers, the would he be executive director of the APA? I don't know if he uses titles like president or executive director, but he's the head bottle washer at the very least, you know.
That was a point of our conversation in how we're going to educate the future to keep the energy sector sustainable and to be able to meet the population's needs.
Did he elaborate, or did he have any insight, I guess, without giving away your article? I mean, maybe a little preview of it, of what he might have said.
We just focused on basically in enabling companies to be able to get the funding they need to do the work they need. So whatever that might be, to enable training, to look for other people, it's just pretty basic in finding the talent itself.
You know, one of the stories that I've found to be the most interesting over the last 10 years, and I'd probably put this in the top four, you know, if I were to have to choose, is the automation of the industry. And when you take a look at where artificial intelligence was going, I think ChatGPT kind of opened up a lot of people's eyes to what artificial intelligence is going to do. Because I know the oil man has been trying to educate the industrial public on artificial intelligence for years. I mean, we're talking 3-4 years before you even started there. They were doing stories on artificial intelligence and warning people about what's coming. And the way that I approached it at the Crude Life was, we've been trying to warn people for about 5 or 6 years, but we use the coal industry, because the coal industry, they used to have about 30 people mining the side of a mountain. Now they're down to 6. And some of the jobs, you know, some of the jobs were replaced with computer operators, but that was only a couple. And so, you know, when you take a look at the 30 people that might have done the side of a mountain, now it was down to like, say, 8 to 10. But now you incorporate AI and those office jobs kind of just went away too. So what is your interpretation of the artificial intelligence being incorporated into oil and gas? Because I have not seen the jobs get replaced from the ones that are being removed.
Well, to be quite honest with you, AI just scares me to death.
thank you for that, because it does with me too, especially as a writer.
Well, exactly. But it really does. And, you know, I think we need to be responsible in the industry, and we need to understand that it's the men and women that work in the industry that make it what it is. And technology is a wonderful thing. You can't argue that technology has enhanced the industry, but you still need the people to be able to implement it. And you need the people to, for lack of better terms, override it if necessary. And when you, to me, when you put that AI factor in, you lose that capability. And I hate to think that, you know, is the implementation of AI a cheap way to replace the cost of paying men and women to do a job? That's what I worry about in the future. You know, automation's great. All of this, these different software packages, that's fine. But I think there needs to be a fine line drawn, you know, in the sand. And you can't take away the importance of the human factor in it.
What are you finding with some of the companies that you've interviewed with the, whether it be artificial intelligence, the energy transition, you know, the new way that you have to check in with the government before you can drill, you know, however you want to phrase that. What are you finding as the biggest conversation point or the biggest hurdle right now in the industry from the different companies that you've been interviewing over the past year?
Well, when you start talking about, you know, reporting to the government and so forth, the whole ESG issue, it really comes down to a financial factor, especially when you start talking or looking at the differences between a large company, for instance, Chevron or Shell, and then an independent operator, you know, down in South Texas. You know, how is that going to affect the bottom line price if you've got a smaller company that basically can't afford to compete? You know, what's that going to do down the road? But I would say that the financial factor, somehow or another, in everything I've been writing about, comes into play. And like I said, whether it's, you know, on the ESG side, or is it, you know, are we looking at enhancing efficiency to drive profits? Somehow or another, it's the finances that come into play.
Oil and Gas Magazine spun off into Oil Woman Magazine, and then also Energies Magazine. Are you writing for three of the three? Are you exclusively to the Oil Man? Excuse me.
I write.
Are you exclusively to the Oil Man? I slurred my words there, so I had to restate.
No, I'm a literary merc. I'll write for just about anybody that will call me. But no, I write for Oil Man, and I also write for Energies. I have not written anything for Oil Woman at this time, at least. But Rebecca is a wonderful human being, wonderful editor. I would love to work with her on Oil Woman if that opportunity ever came to be.
I think she's doing a fantastic job. I've worked with her on a few projects through the different publications that she's done, as well as been interviewed by her And yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I really enjoy about the Oil Man magazine, Oil Woman magazine, and Energies is this is old school journalism. This is still, you know, original interviews. You know, it's original quotes. These are not quotes that are honed and fine-tuned through 15 email exchanges back and forth and that sort of thing. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some stories known as soft news where you want to make sure the information is accurate. And, you know, somebody might change a verb and a quote from time to time to be a little bit different and that sort of thing. And I get that. And I think most people do. But that's one thing I found that is so refreshing about what Emmanuel Sullivan and is it Rebecca Pontoon? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think it's pronounced Ponton, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Rebecca, apologize for the mispronunciations. I've basically only read it in print, you know, and I've talked to her and we didn't get into her last name pronunciation. So at any rate, they're doing a fantastic job. And, you know, to get the guests that they've had, whether it be Wesley Clark, you know, former general Wesley Clark. And then we've got the Big Lebowski, man. That what a get that was. You got Jeff Bridges on the cover of Energies magazine. And so it's been pretty incredible. What are you finding the growth has been for you as a writer? And then also just seeing the growth as the Oil Man last couple years, because boy, most industries going, you know, one direction, the Oil Man's going in a positive direction.
Yeah. I owe my writing career to Emmanuel and Rebecca. I mean, there is no doubt. And I'm proud to say that they gave me an opportunity and I've grown as a writer, working with them. You know, Rebecca does wonderful editing. I mean, she can make incredible suggestions and I love the fact that she'll email me, hey, this particular paragraph in your article, what do you think about such and such? And I love it. You know, I love that input from her because she's very talented. But my opportunities have grown just incredibly with Oil Man. You know, I started out getting an article here and there to now I contribute to every magazine I supply. I write two Oil Man blogs a month for the digital platform. I write two Energies blogs a month for that digital platform. I want to focus a little bit more on safety. And Emmanuel has given me the opportunity to post a safety blog every month on the Oil Man website. And that's going to be huge for me. I really appreciate that. But when I say the quality of the stories that I started with working for Oil Man and now, it's not that the original stories were bad quality, but now, you know, after writing for them for so long, I'm getting more covers and I just love that. I mean, to be able to write an article about Mike Summers was quite a compliment. I wrote the cover on the Danos family, Randy Nichols with Cinco. I mean, just I've had the opportunity to meet really interesting people, and that's just on the cover side. And then the other articles within the magazine, I've had the opportunity to write about really interesting subjects that Emmanuel has given me to write about. And then others that I've gone to him and said, hey, what would you think about a story on this? And he said, absolutely, let's do it. So it's really helped me grow as a writer. And I am very grateful for that.
What is this energy blog that you're speaking of? Elaborate on that just a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
They're basically just current events of what's going on in the industry at the time I sit down to write the blog and we pull from that. You know, it just depends on what's going on in the week. That's all it really is.
So it's like up-to-date compliance things and examples and that sort of
sure.
thing.
Sure. I mean, I just wrote more
of a journalist base than. Would it be fair to say that it's more of a newsy blog, or is it kind of a, oh, I had oatmeal today, and you know?
No, like, they're more of newsworthy blogs. The safety blog will be, you know, my experiences working in the field of safety. But the latest one I just submitted for Energies was solar power generation from outer space, right? Setting satellites in outer space to capture, you know, energy from the sun and then beam it down to Earth. You know, that was something that was being talked about in the news that week. So it's fun because the topics just, they jump all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's
never
boring.
That was one of the nice things about blogs and podcasts is that you can do all that different stuff because, you know, you don't need a established distribution system like, you know, the oil man has with mailing lists and emailing lists and people that go there every day to check different content and et cetera. I'm actually working on a article for next issue on the Crude Life has been tracking the progress of trying to hybrid a semi into a gas combustion engine and a EV battery. And the United States Department of Commerce put a grant together with Train ND Northwest out of the Bakken and Williston, North Dakota. And they basically had a company try to do it. And so we've been tracking the progress with weekly updates on the Crude Life. So we're going to write a kind of a year summary. And they hit a roadblock. After a year and an investment, the oil and gas industry basically got pushed aside, or I should say the trucking industry got pushed aside for agriculture. And that was kind of the last interview we did. Yeah, was that he went to this trade show and everything now was EV farming. And there wasn't hardly anything for his thing anymore. So that's spoiler alert. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty much where that grant ended, was there. And so after a year of trying to do this, you know, we were trying all kinds of different things. Perkins Electric Innovation out of Idaho was the one working on it. But hydrogen, you know, and trying to do natural gas as a hybrid, trying to think outside of the gas box a little bit. And basically what they're trying to do is go from 1 mile an hour, you know, your gas, 1 mile and 1 mile per gallon to, you know, 8. And if they were able to do that, it would revolutionize the entire, you know, trucking industry and transportation industry. So that's what I have coming up in the next issue. Do you have anything to preview coming up in the next? It would be the holiday issue, right, coming up?
Yeah. So I'm going to be writing a story on KBC software. They have this PetroSim software that's supposed to enable various industries, but also downstream oil and gas, to make fast, basically optimal decisions. It's supposed to increase yields while reducing energy usage. So I think that'll be pretty interesting. I have that interview later this week. And I'm going to be attending a webinar on blockchain in the energy sector, which that's pretty new to me, but that's basically how they store transactions and accounting data, and then somehow or another, it will reduce process time and connect assets directly to service contracts. So it sounds like that's another push at the efficiency, right? That's going to drive profitability. So I'm looking forward to those.
That's interesting. Keep this in the back of your mind, okay? Because this is nothing relevant for what you're talking about, but you know, blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency are different. Blockchain is essentially the system that allows the Bitcoin to flow through it and the cryptocurrency to flow through it. But what happens is that, you know, if you complete a contract, you get paid instantly. Once the agreements are in place and the boxes are checked, the blockchain allows the things to happen instantly. And so that's kind of the overview of it. But we actually, I was helping out on a consulting basis, just on a very limited basis. There was a group out of Texas trying to create a cryptocurrency that was backed by barrels of oil. And the SEC stepped in. Yeah, the SEC stepped in and said, nope. I know we found that so interesting because our whole thought was that this is just like gold, you know, like oil and gas is now a commodity. It's just like oil. Right. And so anyway, I thought that was a great idea to really go that direction because every, you know, whatever it was, a 10 or 100 of these crude coins, if you will, you'd have to actually have a storage barrel. You'd actually have to have something in storage that would.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and so I don't know, you know, really what happened, but yeah, the SEC did step in and kind of put a kibosh on it. So I'm not telling you that to, you know, cause any problems or stir the pot to this week when you're doing your interview, but just as a journalist, keep that in the back of your mind that, you know, there are people trying other ways of cryptocurrency that are not being allowed. And
that's very interesting. I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, sir, this has been a great interview today. What do you, where do you send people? Do you got a personal blog? Do you just send people to the oil man? Kind of how do you get your information out there? And by the way, what's this private company that you have a day job? Plug that too.
Oh, okay. Well, I, first of all, I send people to Oil Man. That's pretty much my primary writing location and one of the best magazines in the industry, I'll say. So if you would like to see any of my work, you can go there or you can go to Energies Magazine. The company I work for, my day job, it's called Glytech Services. And we do gas dehydration work, engineering studies, high velocity lube oil flushing. We have a vast array of services, and you can check out our website at www.glytech.com, and that's GLYTECH. They've been around since the 80s. And they have corporate offices in Harvey, Louisiana. We also have an office in Slidell, Louisiana, Shreveport, Louisiana, and also Midland, Texas. And we work all over the country. And so they're good folks to work for and to work with.
Well, sir, thank you so much for your time today. Any final thoughts as we wrap her up?
Hey, no, I appreciate the opportunity to come on. I've listened to your podcast for quite a while, and I'm honored to be able to participate.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition. The Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.